That has to do with, will affect the agenda. In order to accommodate a move of the Operations Committee to the next part of this cycle, we moved the Safety and Security to this session. That really meant we had nothing much in terms of detailed briefings from the safety staff, so we'll just have a couple of questions for them. But this was the month for the chief to report on quarterly security reports, and he was able to put that together, so we appreciate the flexibility. We have our safety comment first, and then we'll do the next business.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chairman Downey and members of the board. Just to reiterate, as we like to do in the event the fire alarm goes off, we would exit out the doors here to the back, through the security post in front, and convene across the street or on either side, but we need to, behind me, meet over in front of the building museum. And we would ask to do that. From a safety contact perspective, I'd like to note that May is National Bicycle Safety Month. And one of the things is, did you know that bikes are associated with more childhood injuries than any other consumer product except automobiles? Sadly, child bicycling deaths increased 45% above the month average in the summer. With 27.7 million children riding bikes, we know there are too many of those kids riding without helmets. Some tips that we'd like to note are to make it a rule. Every time you and your child ride a bike, wear a bicycle helmet that meets the safety standards developed by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Make sure the helmet fits right and your child knows how to put it on correctly. A helmet should sit on top of the head in a level position and should not rock forward, backward, or side to side. The helmet straps must always be buckled, but not too tightly. Try the eyes, ears, and mouth test. Eyes check. Position the helmet on your head, look up, and you should see the bottom rim of the helmet. The rim should be 1 to 2 finger widths above the eyebrows. Ears check. Make sure the straps of the helmet form a V under your ears when buckled. The strap should be snug but comfortable. The mouth check, open your mouth as wide as you can. Do you feel the helmet hug your head? And it's just one of the things we'd like to remind folks so that we hopefully can avoid any injuries to anyone and including our children. Thank you, Chairman Downey.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, other members of this committee. Again, as you indicated, I'm prepared to discuss the first quarter of calendar year 2011 crime statistics versus calendar year 2010. I'm also prepared to talk about initiatives that we have undertaken to make sure that the system is safe and secure. I'll be able to give you updates on some activities that are recent in nature, some crimes that have been reported in the news media. I'll also be able to touch upon initiatives that we have undertaken after the death of Osama bin Laden. Also be able to talk about an initiative that the general manager sort of recommended that we bring together local jurisdictional police agencies to talk about crime in the metro. Next slide. On April 27th, the general manager again recommended that I reach out to my counterparts throughout the jurisdictional areas of the National Capital Region to bring them together here at this building to talk about crime, in particular in their respective jurisdictional locations. We had representatives from about 17 different federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, and we talked about specific crimes. We talked about things that they could do to assist us in making sure that their jurisdictions where the metro operates is secure, and how we can go about working in a more collaborative fashion. We listened to them. We got suggestions about things that they felt that we could do. Some of those things were maybe using the smart trip card so they could access the parking facilities and they too could patrol our system. We have accommodated all of those, and we are diligently doing those types of things. We talked about how we can better communicate and how we can better share intelligent information, which we do on a regular basis, but there's always room for improvement. We talked about representing the concerns of the jurisdictions when we attend civic association meetings, partnering with the respective jurisdictional police agencies and attending and talking about crime and safety in and around the metro system. The response from the participants, both large and small organizations, the chief of Falls Church, as an example, diligently helps us out all the time. Montgomery County, Fairfax County, Arlington, the U.S. Capitol Police and Park Police, everybody plays a role in making sure that the residents of the National Capital Region are safe and secure. And everyone has concerns in their own respective jurisdictions, but they indicated that they were willing to, at any possible way, assist us in ramping up their patrol in our systems. Next slide. We experienced a 6.5% reduction in our calls for service compared to the first quarter of 2010, and we had a 2% increase in custodial arrests made by our police officers in the first quarter of 2010. We are pleased to report a 5.2% increase in citation enforcement, which means that the officers are out there observing public conduct ordinances, no smoking, eating and drinking, and doing a lot of self-initiated activity. This increase can be attributed to the uniform visibility and focus patrol efforts. Unfortunately, we have experienced an increase in bus operator assaults by 5, so it's up to 17 this reporting period. The types of assaults continue to be minor in nature, with the majority of the assaults are being perpetrated by subjects who are throwing rocks and missiles and spitting upon the bus operators. Finally, I'm pleased to report that the probability of being a victim of a Part 1 crime has decreased 1.04 or 16%, which means that for every million customers utilizing our system, the probability of being a victim of a Part 1 crime is 5.09, which in comparison to any jurisdictional agency is really, really low. However, as we always purport, that one crime on the metro is one crime too many. Next slide.
Question?
Yes.
Just a quick question on the bus operator assaults. You said an increase. For these types of assaults really upset me, and I get very concerned. I know that we all do on this, but is there any sense of the areas that this is occurring more in? In other words, are we trending or tracking areas that we see this more, or certain routes and such? And can you talk to that, Chief?
Yes, absolutely. The majority of the crimes and assaults on our bus operators and the problems associated with crimes in general primarily happen in the southeast quadrant of the District of Columbia, where we sort of designate the majority of our efforts with our plainclothes officers as well as uniformed police officers. We work, again, with the jurisdictional police agencies, and part of the meeting that we had on the 27th was to ask them if at all possible, as buses go through their jurisdictions, if they could hop on and say hello to the bus operator, maybe ride one block, two blocks, and therefore we would multiply the uniform presence on our buses. But those are the areas, 17, even though it's a spitting or throwing of an object, some of those can be serious, but the majority of those are minor in nature, where the bus operator does not sustain an injury.
I had a question along the same lines. Are they still predominantly juvenile incidents?
The majority of our crime, as we began to track, whether it's those that have been arrested or those that are based on descriptions of the violator, they're overwhelmingly young people, young adults.
And as a follow-up, I know Mr. Wells and the district have rolled out this DC1 card for students to use as a fare card, and I understand the conveniences associated with that, but is there, is a function of that card a better ability for us to identify the students who are on the buses and on the trains in the event there is an incident? And in addition to that, do we revoke transit privileges for juveniles who are convicted of crimes on our system?
I can tell you that I'm pretty certain that we don't revoke any privileges of a juvenile because of their particular conduct. The particular aspects of the DC-1 card, I think, probably could be best answered by Mr. Wells. I think we're working in partnership with the District of Columbia to improve our ability to have a one-card system, or for the District of Columbia to have a card that can do a multitude of things. Some of the byproducts of that card could very well be something that we in law enforcement find beneficial, but the structure and the process of distributing the cards, I think it's something that the District of Columbia probably knows a little bit more about it than we here at Metro. We work, I think, Carol Kissel in her efforts to work in partnership with the District of Columbia, but we are not allowing patrons to use the card based upon their conduct at this time.
I asked that question in part because I know in earlier reports there was sometimes difficulty identifying perpetrators. There were incidents where people didn't have any identification, which is frequently the case with juveniles. And, of course, this is a form of identification now. So, you know, I'd be interested as that progresses to better understand how that can help with some of these challenges we've had, particularly in certain areas where we may now know, because of the linkage to the Smart Trip card, the identity of somebody using the system.
I think it would be of great benefit. Currently now we do have an extensive effort with the school administrators where we visit many of the schools where we have our problems, and we go out to the assemblies and we talk about safety and security on the Metro and how they should conduct themselves. But I think it would have a benefit when it's all said and done and it's implemented throughout the city. It would have a benefit for security. Okay, we have identified our top five highest calls for service for the first quarter. Again, subject stops, and this reinforces that the officers are out there doing their job, and many of these subject stops may be as a result of a lookout for a particular crime or the observance on the part of the police officers of criminal activity. We have seen a decrease in our calls for disorderly subjects, which is a plus. We've attributed that decrease, again, to our efforts to deploy resources based on crime trends derived from our biweekly MetroStat process. We wanted to provide a quick snapshot of the first quarter crime stats for 2011 in comparison to the previous 5 years. And again, it's for the same time period, the first quarter of those years. And why we look at it in that regard is that whether it's weather, whether it's certain activities that happen during those time frames, we want to look at it from that standpoint. Though we have experienced a slight increase in motor vehicle theft and attempts, the majority of the Part 1 offenses have decreased. Again, we believe that our efforts and ability to analyze crime trends derived from our MetroStat process has positively impacted our crime trends. Every week we're looking to find ways to improve how we can quickly identify hot spots, times that crimes are being committed, and circling the wagons to make sure that internally we reach out to the right people in the police department as well as externally to our neighbors in law enforcement to see if, in fact, we can devise a way to eliminate the Part 1 crimes. And as you see, for the first quarter in calendar year 2010, there were 490 Part 1 crimes, and this reporting period, 416. Next slide. These charts simply reflect our crime rate comparison by mode as reported in the Vital Sign report. Metro bus related crime remains relatively low and is on par with the same trend as was reported last year. I'm pleased to report that Metro rail crime has experienced a significant reduction as well, approximately 17%. Combining robbery type snatches continues to be our most challenging to address. And hopefully within the next several months, we will come back before this committee and report on some activity that's taking place now that would have a direct results in the reduction of our robberies. And again, it talks about partnership with our jurisdictional agencies as well as the Federal Bureau of Investigations. I'm pleased to report that the Metro Rail, I talked about that, there have been approximately 200 robberies for the first quarter of 2011. And though we experienced a slight increase in parking lot related crimes, parking lot crime is lower than the same time period at last year. Working with the general manager, working with Dave Kubicek, we think that we have some ideas where we can possibly reduce parking lot related crimes by utilizing personnel to patrol our lots, not necessarily in the capacity of a police officer, but parking lot monitors who, just by their mere presence of being there, will discourage the bad guys from taking advantage and ripping off people's property. So that's something that hopefully we can roll out within the next week.
And those monitors would go from lot to lot, so they'll be...
They will be permanently, hopefully they will be permanently assigned to a particular lot.
Particular lot, okay.
And reporting out, and we're looking, working with people who are on limited duty, so that if they have the capacity to drive a vehicle, then that could conceivably be one of their assignments. Robbery snatch offenses are down over 40% for the first quarter 2010 to this quarter. Though you can see we have experienced an increase in some of our other types of robberies, the increase is very minor. We will continue with reminding our customers and the first-time riders to be vigilant and pay attention to the surroundings. We will also continue to provide our customers with crime prevention literature during our ongoing outreach activities. And taking a page out of the general manager's book, recently he continues to have the meet the general manager at various locations throughout the system. We will also mimic that and meet the chief of police and some of our representatives so we can hear directly from our customers some of the concerns that we may not necessarily be tracking. And so we will start that next week as well. When we look at Part 1 crimes against property, parking lot related crimes is trending downward as we continue to monitor the best practices and to include hours of deployment and assignments. One of the things that we've done over the last 3 months was to look at all of our calls for service and look at the times where we had the increased ridership and the reported crimes that are taking place. And we have to sort of more diligently match up that with our deployment of our resources to make sure that they're here when the crime is happening, when the ridership is up. We know that there are certain stations based upon our crime stat, a model that you're more apt to be confronted with crimes, and that's where we're just deploying our people. We are continuing with our bait bike initiative and are in the process of procuring additional bikes. We're also exploring the feasibility of purchasing bike locks to hand out to our customers during our public outreaches, similar to how we provide auto theft steering clubs to our customers. On May 20th, as indicated by Mr. Doherty, it's Bike to Work Day for the region, and we plan to be conducting awareness at our key stations and, again, passing out literature to sort of reinforce being vigilant relative to crime. A recent arrest at the New Carrollton station is just one example of outstanding police work MTP officers do each day. An officer observed a customer park in the Kissing Ride in a space designated for handicapped customers without a handicap placard or registration plates indicating such. The officer approached the vehicle and made the driver aware of their mistakes. During the conversation, the officer noticed the strong odor of marijuana emitting from the vehicle. The driver was subsequently arrested, and recovered from the driver was a loaded handgun. The case is pending trial. One of the other cases that received a lot of publicity was the case involving Mr. Allen Haywood that occurred on January the 2nd. Through an outstanding effort on the part of citizens as well as law enforcement, we were able to identify a female victim who pled guilty to that, perpetrator, who pled guilty to that particular charge, and she is pending sentences, as a matter of fact, today. Would also briefly give you a quick update on the George Avenue Petworth shooting that took place back on May 5th. Within hours, and thanks to some closed-circuit TV camera video and the actions of one of our bus operators who alerted the police that what was identified as victims were trying to board a bus en route to the hospital because they had a wound. We were able to, within hours, identify a suspect in that particular case, reached out to the United States Attorney's Office with evidence that we provided to him, received a search warrant as well as an arrest warrant, so that person is taken into custody. It's an interesting case that may not necessarily have the victims. I don't want to say too, right, may not be the innocent victims, but that is an example of outstanding police work, a collaboration with the Metropolitan Police Department as well as our detectives. Now we're going to talk about the next slide, the spring and summer initiatives. We are routinely staffing events in the areas with personnel to ensure coverage at ongoing events within the region. As we are aware of the recent death of Osama bin Laden, right after that, transit agencies in particular across the country went into action by anticipating that there would be a need for ramping up things, even though there was no specific threat toward transit. Then subsequent to that, we had meetings with the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security, and it was revealed that there were some items that were mentioned that specifically talk about trains and that specifically talk about certain dates, anniversaries, the 4th of July, the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, and it also talked about specific cities. So based upon that, again, we added additional police officers, working in conjunction with the local jurisdictions. We got their support. So within the last week, 2 weeks, you've seen an increase in uniform presence. We've moved some of our administrative staff out into the system to make sure that we provide to our customers and our employees the level of safety and security that they so well deserve. So we are continually working with them. We are consistently evaluating our deployment practices and are cognizant that we routinely see an increase in crime during the warmer months of the year. We're working with the Office of Long Range Planning and launching a pilot program to install cameras at the College Park stations that will provide coverage in the area of the bike racks. We are also working with various metro departments in the removal of bike racks that are no longer serviceable and placing bike racks in highly visible locations in proximity to the station entrances. We're also working on the procurement of portable lighting equipment to enhance and improve external lighting conditions at key stations. We found that this has been very beneficial at some of our outlining stations by having additional lighting as well as police officers in their lights, and the response from the public that use our system at late hours has been positive. Finally, we continue to work on the installation of cameras that will provide coverage at station entrances, and I can't say enough about the investigatory tool that provides us insight on a quick basis as to activities that are taking place in our system. We can quickly discern whether or not something was of a criminal nature, an accident, and that would alleviate many of the problems that we now have in investigating those types of things. I would also welcome you to participate. Tomorrow is National Law Enforcement Memorial Week, so you'll see police officers from all over the country coming in to honor their respective fellow officers. We have two officers that are on the memorial. We, too, will have an annual award ceremony tomorrow in this room celebrating the outstanding contributions of our police officers over the course of the last year. And I'm open for questions.
obviously a very timely day to have this report, and we very much appreciate what you and the entire force does. I had a couple of comments, and then we'll ask questions. We did hear this morning about delays, or at least a lack of acceptable progress on capital project implementations. Perhaps at a later time we could get a report on how that is being alleviated and how we can move ahead.
Absolutely, and yeah. I think the effort that Dave Kubitschek and his team, bringing everybody, not just the capital grants, but all grants. It is the same type of tracking that we find to be very beneficial. In the case of the Transit Security Grant Program and the UASI grants, as well as the R grants primarily had personnel, yeah. And we got 20 additional police officers, and that expenditure was quickly absorbed. Relative to some of the older grants, they have a lot of stipulations that come to us by way of TSA, FEMA, and we have to work internally to make sure that the letter of the law relative to that particular grant is carried out, and if we deviate, then we are subject to penalty or loss of those resources. So we have a young lady that came aboard a year ago, Lisa Brennan, who came to us by way of TSA and specialized in grants that were being administered throughout the whole transit community. And working with our grant team here, we can better understand the limitations of those grants, how we can use them, because we just can't mix them up. And so we think that over the course of the next several weeks and months, we're going to be in a better position for the expenditure of those grants.
That would be good. And if there are systemic problems with those grants, let us know. We'll go to the DHS and see if there are. No, I'm not sure they're aware of really what goes on once they hand out the money, and it's important that we be able to use it well.
We have some very good friends at FEMA, John Pister, the new TSA administrator.
He came to your graduation.
Absolutely. And so there's an understanding. Some of the grants in the earlier stages provided us with the cameras, but they didn't provide for the maintenance. And so I think many transit agencies are saying we need the maintenance package as well. So there's been some flexibility on the part of TSA to sort of be open.
Excellent. At some future time, I would like to show what a modern camera can produce. We've seen some things earlier that look like underwater photography, but I think the public would be well served if they knew exactly what we are able to see and how we can use it as a crime-stopping, crime-solving tool.
Yeah, I can just want to attest to the fact that I certainly, in my travels during the day on Metro Rail, have seen many more uniformed police out there, so I've certainly witnessed it. And I think the next big holiday is Memorial Day weekend, so obviously I'm sure you're gearing up for that as well.
Absolutely, sir.
I'm curious. I ran into a bike policeman for the first time from Metro Transit 2 days ago, and he says it's much quicker to go to the different entrances when he's downtown, and that's how the bike works for him. How many bike police do we have in Metro Transit?
Chief Campbell, can you tell me right off the top of your head how many bike police officers we have?
Well, I can tell you, I'm previously with the District 1 Commander, so this week, and I can tell you, District 1, we have approximately 6 bike officers. However, we have several that have been trained, and then we're awaiting bike helmets and safety glasses. That procurement has come in, so the bike officers who are trained will have their equipment. And they also be allowed to operate in T3. Captain Donald is from District 2, and you might also come in right off. We have 11 in our district.
And then how effective are they in patrolling our parking lots? Is this a better way to do it?
There's a combination of ways in our parking lots, and I think predominantly we've been utilizing police officers, but we have 65,000 parking spaces, and it's probably a better use of personnel to have someone patrolling the lots or have a loudspeaker that's positioned in the lots that continuously makes an announcement, or to have cameras in the lot. We want to give the impression to our customers that their properties will be protected, and we think combining those things, it will reduce the opportunities. Relative to the bike, we know that there's some headways in the system, and sometimes in the downtown area, it's much easier to move from one station to the next as opposed to waiting for the train. So there are benefits both in the core as well as out in the parking lots.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, two questions or just sort of suggestions. You're the expert on reducing crime, and I'm certainly not, but some banks put up signs that say these premises are, you know, covered by cameras. Everything that happens in here is on camera, and I wonder whether it would make sense for Metro to think about putting up signs saying that when you enter Metro property, you're on camera to protect your safety and your property. That might dissuade some people from doing things, even if the cameras aren't everywhere.
Yeah, and I think that's something that Carol O'Keefe would weigh in on. We don't necessarily want to tell the public that we are watching every minute and be held liable.
I'd like to know that we think what we were. I don't know.
We'll take a look.
That's just a thought. I'm not an expert on how to reduce crime. The other thought that I discussed with you the other day when you gave us the excellent orientation briefing for the new members of the board was my past experience with successfully seeing crime reduced by neighborhood watches. And I raised to you, and I wonder maybe somebody on your staff could take a look at whether other transit systems have ever implemented, and if they have, whether they've had any success with it, the idea of like a Metro watch, where I suspect a large number of our riders would be willing to be part of a semi-formal program where a lot of people would have their eyes open. They'd maybe go through one day of training to learn how to, you know, what the Metro's rules are, and that, you know, they wouldn't be police officers, obviously, but they could report to the police actions that need to be addressed. That's just a thought. Neighborhood watches have been very successful in many places by getting regular citizens to be part of looking out for bad activities, and maybe that could help here in the Metro system if we had a Metro watch.
And I think you're absolutely right, and I think the Federal Transit Administration back in 2003 launched what was comparable to Neighborhood Watch by way of Transit Watch. And it was a combination of public awareness encompassing the thousands of people who ride transit. If you see something, say something. Is that your bag? And different transit agencies adopted slogans and brought the riders into the equations of providing security. We here at Metro have the Citizen Emergency Response Team, which primarily says that we provide them with that training as to how to get out of a train, what to do in an emergency, and we don't pay them to ride the system, or we don't give them free rides, but they're there in the event they're in the system, but we can incorporate that into something that's a little bigger than just the public awareness campaign.
Thank you, Chief, for the briefing. I think it was very helpful and shows a lot of progress. We don't have a formal safety briefing this month, but I do have a couple of issues I want to touch on. One is overtime and the implications of that. One is what we're doing to improve our ability to investigate accidents in a timely fashion. And then my understanding is, Jim, you have a report on a recent incident.
Yes, sir.
Right. So let me start with the overtime. This is, I think, a big concern for me as I at least read what has been reported. I spent a lot of time on regulatory matters having to do with fatigue in various modes of transportation, and it certainly appears to me that some of the duty cycles that we're using would exceed any reasonable standard. It's, people would not be allowed to drive a truck or fly a plane the amount of time that is being clocked. I understand the issue of getting work done. I understand that oftentimes overtime is a financial device that makes sense. get some more work out of people rather than hiring another. But if it's pushed to the point of fatigue, these are people who are out on the right-of-way in a harsh environment and putting themselves, their fellow workers, and others at jeopardy if their judgment is clouded. And that's one of the first things that happens with fatigue, whether it's from a long day or a stretch of several days without a break. So what I would like to get is some sense of how management copes with this issue, what standards are in place, what kind of reporting is there, and what kind of judgment is applied to assuring that we are not creating situations of fatigue.
Okay, I guess if I could start first, I'd like to note at this time that the amount of overtime and the hours of service for a transit employee is not regulated specifically for the transit agencies. APTA does have a standard that deals specifically with operators at this time, but that's the only standard that I'm aware of. And we certainly do recognize that fatigue can, you know, affect a human factor type event. And for the most part, the attention to employees working overtime at this point is relating to the construction inspectors. And the construction inspectors are not typically performing the work activity, but rather inspecting a work product completed by others.
If they're fatigued and do a less than adequate inspection, they're putting a lot of risk into the system.
Certainly with a possibility of fatigue, but one of the things that we're doing certainly from the, you know, from the safety perspective, our safety officers are out during our major project work shutdowns, watching for safety conformance, being available as a resource if needed. And part of it is this trying, you know, to achieve safety and our state of good repair, as well as we are aggressively working to address the recommendations or findings of the NTSB, the FTA, and the TOC, while balancing, if you will, you know, the work and ensuring that, safety is, you know, being monitored and addressed. And if we do see anything from a safety officer perspective, we do bring it to the attention of supervision or management. And even at this time, the operations and human resources team are working to hire additional staff, you know, to address any possibility of worker fatigue. And if I could, I'd like Mr. Kubicek to provide the status of where we're at in hiring additional staff.
Okay, as it relates to the overall inspectors that were noted in the newspaper article, we have around a total of 70 individuals that are budgeted, you know, presently for this craft. We have 19 vacancies at this point in time in that area. We have 5 offers that are being processed by HR to extend. We have 13 that are in the interview phase, and we have one of them that's being reclassified. With the additional staffing that was approved here last month for Dulles and stuff, there's another 6 inspectors that's coming on top of that. So as that comes into play, we do think that it will reduce the numbers. We're also looking to make sure that the specific individuals that are, you know, are working this, some of them have a little bit more specialty, you know, than others. And so their skill set is very, very scarce when it comes to that.
But whose judgment is it to say we would allow a person to work those numbers of hours?
It is basically off of the management staff and the individual. So, you know, again, the rule of thumb is, you know, 16 hours is the max.
And 16 hours for how many consecutive days?
Don't necessarily have a rule or standard at this time.
You can't drive a truck more than 10 hours a day in a 14-hour work schedule, and you must take 34 hours off every 5 or 6 days because of fatigue concerns.
Yes, yes. Now, again, this is not the manual labor, you know, type process that they're going through.
It's a mental process.
But it is, I would agree, it is mental.
Severely affected by fatigue.
Yes. And as we, you know, ramp up this project and program, as we all know, we've got TOC recommendations, we have NTSB recommendations, we have FTA recommendations.
And we'll have recommendations in this area if we don't deal with it.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do, is trying to fill these positions. And I would also say that through the history of, you know, my brief time here in this organization, overtime was a tool that was, you know, programmed in to help reduce the staffing levels. And as we work through this
improperly
project.
Improperly used, it can be such a tool. Improperly used, it can be the kind of tool that causes accidents.
Yeah, and so one of the things that we, you know, our evaluator looking at is saying, okay, based on the overtime expenditures and stuff that we see here, is it in the best interest to start reverting back to start having regular full-time positions so that way you can dilute the amount of hours and stuff that are being worked in this overtime environment? We've done that in the track department 2 years ago, whenever we saw that, to kind of make the first push to start, you know, adjusting our levels so that we're trying to match it with the amount of work and stuff that's required out there. I'd also talk about on the track supervisors that were also noted. We in the track department, we've got openings for about 32 people. Five of them are supervisors. My number would be 33, then about 20 of them are track-related individuals. With that right there, one of the things that's taken place is that most of this work is related to capital, you know, is to making the repairs and the efforts. But, for example, one of the things that we're doing on the red line, because of all of the rail breaks and the potential that we've had on that, there's additional inspections and reviews and stuff, you know, that are taking place. So we are exceeding some of our own standards. Just for the simple fact that we see to keep this system going safely, that we need to have the additional reviews, the additional, you know, interaction. And so whenever we do get this staffing and stuff, you know, in place, and we'll, you know, continue to monitor that accordingly. But
I'm very supportive of doing the job right. And this is not a financial issue per se. If we're talking about capital, we're looking at where we are. I think you need to look at other areas within the authority. Is it a bottleneck in the personnel system? Just where is it? We need the right people out there working the right number of hours and doing the job right. Yes.
Mr. Limick spoke to temporary augmentation, and I know that there are the challenges of bringing in people and augmenting this. Is there anything else that we could do? For example, you need experience in order to do this. Are there folks who are more readily able to come back to this authority to do some limited portions of things that keep the project moving from that standpoint? I think it's really difficult to, we're kind of chasing our tails right now, trying to get this off the ground, but I think Mr. Downey's point is a very interesting one that we probably need to look at.
Yeah. We have a lot of factors we have to balance, and the amount of using overtime here is not a financial consideration. As you know, as we referenced a few minutes ago, we have NTSB recommendations that are all safety driven, and the NTSB was not happy with us in terms of our progress a year ago on implementing the recommendations. They're now satisfied that we're moving at a pace that would implement it in a timely fashion. Still take a couple years to do. What we've done is simultaneously look to recruit more people, figure out how many more people we need, look to recruit those people. As Dave mentioned, we're in the process of that. While that is ongoing, we are also using overtime, using the existing resources we can to advance the work, which is important to our customers as well as our own employees' safety. So we're trying to take the resources you have and maximize use of it. Safety department is out there on the major projects to monitor how things are going along, and if they see a situation, not only them but the supervisors and management with too much fatigue, that sort of thing, they're supposed to raise the flag. They will raise the flag as well as the supervisors to make sure that it doesn't continue. It's something that in the long run we don't want to continue the use of the overtime. Absolutely not that much. There is a financial point where it makes some sense, and from a fatigue point, you can easily tolerate in the long term. But that's why we're out hiring more people, going to job fairs, recruiting military veterans who have, you know, specialties that can be converted into transit work. Some of the folks require training just to work safely on this railroad. But in addition to that, they may require more technical training, so it takes a while to get them trained so they can do, you know, the easier jobs first and then eventually work themselves up. So we're trying to make that all come together, advance the safety of the railroad as well as the bus system, and try to do it within some limitations. So we're going to move in that direction, and we're trying to make that balance.
Well, we appreciate the effort. We know it's complicated. the reason we have a safety committee is to look at that issue isolated from all others and make sure that we're not taking trade-offs that are putting us at an unfortunate amount of risk.
Mr. Downey?
Any further questions?
Mr. Downey, I just would appreciate it, Mr. Kubitschek saying, you know, we have a rule of thumb on hours, and we could talk about whether, you know, we thought that was the right rule of thumb, but you have a rule of thumb and so on. But I just wonder if you might report back to us at some later point about whether there are some other rules of thumb, numbers of days or other things, that recognizing that things happen and the right people sometimes need to work more, but it would make me feel better to know that there were, you know, after so many days, people really do have to take a day off and that kind of stuff.
Sure. I mean, we have no problem in following up. And again, we want to get these additional positions filled as soon as possible, working with HR, background checks, medical reviews, you know, because we've even went to the extent of looking how long it takes us to hire somebody here. I mean, all the steps, the recruitment, everything else, because if it takes us several months to do it, and then you've got to communicate with all these other departments, everything has to sequence, and as we ramp up, you never can get ahead of the curve. And so that's another effort that's being undertaken. But we have, you know, absolutely, to stabilize it, and we will definitely follow up.
I mean, I would hate to suggest we need to slow down the capital program, but there comes a point where you say if we don't have the resources, we should not be undertaking the work.
You know, I think we also have to keep in mind that we're digging ourselves out of a hole with regard to the maintenance system. It was not maintained the way it should be, and we are now not only paying for it, but in that catch-up mode to get to where it is a safer system than it was.
Mr. Downey, if I might just – this is about us being intentional about when we go beyond. And that's really – that's the point I'm trying to make is – you know, when does the flag go up and somebody says, nope, this is going to be fine. I just don't want us to accidentally get to a place where somebody is at risk.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sir. Basically, at the direction of the general manager and CEO over the past several months, the safety staff has been responding to and investigating major accidents, and that's basically an accident with multiple claimed injuries, significant property damage, or both. Other incidents may also be investigated at the direction of management, and that could be near misses, close calls, things along that line that may not have resulted in an actual accident. And certainly we want to remind folks that the purpose of the safety investigation is to identify the facts of the event, determine the root cause or root causes, draft recommendations, if appropriate, prepare an internal report, and draft lessons learned, again, when appropriate, noting that the primary cause for conducting an investigation is to prevent the reoccurrence or to avoid an accident. The safety department submits the report for review to the various WMATA stakeholders, and if needed, safety would arrange for reconstruction examination of an accident. The safety department works closely with the transit police and operations staff to investigate any accidents. We've been training the WMATA staff through the United States DOT Federal Transit Administration, Transportation Safety Institute, you know, to investigate the accidents. And in fact, we recently held the rail incident investigation course here, and next week we are holding the fundamentals of bus collision investigation at our Carmen Turner facility. Any significant reports are reviewed during our executive safety committee meetings, and as you are aware, also some incidents are reported here and provided to the board safety and security committee. The incident reports are and have been inputted into the new safety measurement system, allowing for a more deliberate investigation process, document control, while affording multiple departments the opportunity to participate in the investigation process simultaneously. And then whenever required, the Tri-State Oversight Committee is notified, or the NTSB, for rail-type incidents, and even in many cases, we notify the TOC as a courtesy notification to keep them in the loop and provide them the information. So a lot has changed in the last several months in the investigation and the response, and we're certainly in that mode to prevent any kind of reoccurrence from occurring while also providing a good incident investigation or accident investigation for the authority.
And specifically, this issue arose in the connection of a rule, apparently a rule under the contract that information developed more than 20 days after an accident cannot be used in disciplinary proceedings. And while I recognize the primary purpose of your activity is safety, I think we have to also consider how we use that information and how we can have it timely if it's important to use it.
Yes, sir. And the last, as we said, we're letting you know, actually, an incident occurred about 2 o'clock in the morning today where a Metro flat car made contact at low speed with the rear of a stationary rail grinding vehicle operated by a contractor in the vicinity of the medical center. There were no injuries to any Metro employee. There was no effect on a revenue service. The Metro flat cars are moved around the rails by a prime mover in close proximity with other track equipment. In this instance, the prime mover was pushing 2 flat cars toward the rail grinding vehicle. The rail grinding vehicle is used to grind the surface of our rails as part of our ongoing track maintenance program. During this process, there's a lot of sparks and dust that is created. The Metro flat cars are equipped with 2 large water tanks and pumps that work in tandem with the rail grinder vehicle to keep the area moist and mitigate any dust. Metro's investigation into the cause of the incident is ongoing. However, the investigation is looking at all plausible factors that may have contributed to this incident, and this includes the line of sight between the operator and the prime mover and the flag person that was located on the lead flat car, the line of sight between the flag person and the rear of the rail grinding vehicle, the communication between the roadway worker in charge, the flag person, and the operator of the prime mover. We're looking at were hand signals or radio communications in use at the time. The lighting on the prime mover, the flats, and the rail grinding vehicle. Did this cause potentially a visual impairment to the line of sight? The daily work schedules of the individuals assigned to the job. And from a mechanical perspective, the flag person has a valve or a dump valve that's in their control that could apply the emergency brake. Was it activated and did it work? At this point, the immediate steps that were taken is that all work has been halted or was halted last night. Notifications were made to the TOC chair at approximately 3:20 this morning, and then the rest of the TOC team at about 3:25. All of the employees and supervision assigned to the job were brought in for post-incident testing, and at this point our investigation is ongoing, but it's really, you know, just starting, if you will, from the on-scene activities, and we will continue to actually drill down and determine the root causes of this event, but wanted to bring it to the board's attention, let you know that it did occur and that we are taking steps to investigate and learn from the event.
Thank you. And I actually don't have a specific question about that, about the report, but I guess it's more of a broader question and with respect to the capital program, safety and security, and our ability to manage what we have. And I guess it's really a question of, I know that you're putting in a lot of new systems, new infrastructure. We've got an enormous task, as Richard pointed out, to get out of the hole, not let alone the day-to-day maintenance and the capital improvements. You're building new systems. You're going to be coming back to us with additional ways to improve the efficiency and to get more done more quickly and more efficiently. To this point, and I appreciate the enormity of the job, to this point, have we given to you, have we authorized the flexibility and the resources that you need at this moment to be able to do everything possible to get to the place you need to be? Are there areas, and I know some things you're going to come back and ask for later when you're finished, but at this point, are you in a place to be able to maximize what you have? And are there additional things we can do right this moment that would give you additional flexibility to be more effective, to operate more safely, and to be more efficient? Because I wouldn't want to wait on those things if there were things that we could actually do now.
We're not waiting.
To enhance.
We're not waiting. Thing is that we recognized a year ago that we didn't have the infrastructure to support the capital program envisioned just to get out of the hole. And
whether you heard, as you heard with Ulrich's presentation this morning, just getting the management structure in place for that, the information structure, so that we could, instead of having, you know, individual project managers trying to figure out how they fit into everything, we're now really trying to manage the program. You've given us money in terms of the six-year capital program. You've provided the budget that we want. It is getting the systems in place, which we've been doing, to try to now fill up and take the money and convert it into real resources to get the job done. So I'm not, other than what's already been asked for, we're not asking for more money on top of it. We really have to do the work to spend all that money and spend it right. That's where we are at the moment. I may come back in a year or two and say, oh, we could use more at this point, but right now we got to deal with what we got.
I appreciate that and respect it, and everyone is putting a lot of pressure on everyone, and we know that you're the eye of the storm, and we all feel that same urgency and pressure, but it's important for me to ask that question regularly, because sometimes it's we need to be drawn out and to answer the questions squarely, and I know that you do. I appreciate your candor always, but I just want to make sure.
I will not hesitate. I will not hesitate.